You better start now, because those who will lead 18 months from now will be those who understand how we're going to create sustainable and scalable growth. And that means whether we're using a tool effectively such as yours or whether we implement services correctly, this change is coming, because growth at all costs, like I said, has come to an end.
This is Revenue Makers, the podcast by Sixth Sense, investigating successful revenue strategies that pushed companies ahead. Hey, Adam.
Yes?
What's the definition of insanity?
Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting the same result.
Exactly. And so that's kind of what's been going on, right? Growth at all costs, not taking into consideration who you're selling to, how to deliver value to your customers. I mean, we see it a lot in the SaaS landscape.
We do. And we have got a great guest this week in Jaco van der Kooi from a services consulting firm called Winning by Design. And he is a energetic, eccentric guy. I don't say eccentric, it's probably not the right word, but really, really, really engaging, talking about what the next evolution is after growth at all costs and kind of what it all means and how we can do it and how we can pull in AI. Of course, we have to talk about AI and all the things in between.
There you go. And you can call him eccentric. I mean, he did the podcast from his van that is parked somewhere along the coastline of California. A lot of energy, but a lot of just really great takeaways on how to plan for the future, how to drive a more scalable business, and how to start with the end in mind. So I think folks are going to dig it.
A lot of great insights. Let's jump in.
Let's do it. Hi, Jaco. Thanks so much for joining us on Revenue Makers today. And before Revenue Makers, you were our closing keynote at Sixth Sense Inspire in London. So it brought the house down. It was a great way to end the day. And in that keynote, you mentioned the end of the growth at all cost era and really a transition towards the revenue factory. And you talked about some principles, you know, that explained why we're going there. But can you elaborate on the key factors that drove that shift in the SaaS industry?
Well, first of all, was that fun or what? Tell me.
It was fun.
Right? Yeah, right?
People were literally on, well, they were supposed to be up. You had them up. There was movement. There was energy. I loved it. It was great.
Right?
The chest bump. Oh. It wasn't with me, but with the chest bump that you did with the our MC.
Legendary. I don't know. Like, and that was impromptu, right? I felt that he was standing there. He wanted to engage and I go like, let's do it. Like, no, these are authentic moments, right? And they help us fantastic. Actually, that leads us into growth at all costs. I think that one of the keys to growth at all costs is that it lacks any authenticity, right? Like if I just connect one this right there, no authenticity. Just spamming people and addressing them, you know, like, which previously was an approach that worked. And the thing that I want to make clear is we are maturing from growth at all costs. We're not ignoring it. We're not like trying to turn the time back. It's like you can't turn the time back on puberty, right? It's a phase in life that you've learned from and now you matured. Same thing here, growth at all costs. We're thankful we stand on the shoulders of what it has accomplished, but we now mature into the next phase.
So I guess when you talk about, like, you drew a parallel between like factories, like the actual physical factory, and then SaaS go-to-market teams, which I thought, you know, that's a really, really great analogy. Can you kind of talk about how that is the analogy for the transformation that's going on and how it actually like what does that practically mean if I'm, you know, I'm working at a SaaS company from a go-to-market perspective?
What we notice is that when a company achieves about $10 million in revenue, its processes have matured and it starts to act and operate like a factory. Now, a factory has three goals. Hey, it needs to produce more. It needs to produce more effectively. Hence, you're starting to apply robots and stuff and the likes of it. And you need to deliver quality. These three things map exactly to what growth looks like beyond $10 million. I need to keep growing my revenue. That growth of revenue needs to be affordable, sustainable, whatever that means. We can come to terms later on that. And I need to deliver quality, and quality is the impact the customer gets. In other words, I need to get a high GRR and a high NRR out of that, right? That's what a SaaS and how a SaaS factory works. So it works alongside. Second that it does is GTM motions, such as an outbound motion to enterprise or an inbound motion or X or targeted account-based motion Y. These motions mimic production lines in the factory. They have their own metrics. They have their own performance. And then the third one is AI in the factory is placing the in the revenue factory is playing the same role that robots play in a physical manufacturing facility. It replaces skills that can be done at a lower cost and better performed by an automated system, in this case, an AI system, which goes beyond automation, but that's what it is. So these three, hey, same goals, operates with production lines, and it applies technology to replace it, are essentially the keys to what makes it look and feel like a factory.
In theory, I think we all agree growth at all costs is not sustainable. Doesn't mean the expectation isn't there, right? We are all being asked to continue to drive results, rapid growth often, and budgets are tight. You know, not so much, I think, focus on cost efficiency. Like, how do we balance those expectations with the reality of what we need to be putting in place now to build for the future?
I'll say it's the simple statement is this: stop doing what doesn't work and do more of what works. That statement in itself is simple, right? But most people don't know what works and they don't know what's not working. They just kept doing. So growth at all cost is put your IQ at zero and keep going, right? And all I'm saying is, like, can we start measuring what works? What will be the metrics? How will we determine what is a good one, right? And as soon as you enter that field, you obviously are starting to come to the conclusion, hey, I need to target my customers better. I need to give them a better experience when I speak to them. I need to treat them better when they sign on. I need to help them achieve success from the product that I promised to them. All that automatically falls out. And what you'll see, and I found this over the years, is we continue this mindset of do more, and we're now entering a mindset of do better, not do more. And I just want to make sure I'm not asking you to do more better, right? I'm not saying it's out, do more spam email better. I'm saying do better.
AI can also help with that.
That's right.
And we don't want it.
And we don't want that. And that's where you see the market is headed right now, right? Because we go like, hey, growth at all costs doesn't work. And let me tell you what that means. Currently, with the latest metrics coming in via Dave Spitz from Bensights, we are operating at double the cost, half the growth. That's what growth at all costs is giving us right now. Half the growth rate at double the cost.
So yes, the right metrics, but the right metrics for those characteristics and those hallmarks that you just said. Personalized, meet your customer where they are, talk to them about the pain points that they're having, right? That is a very different set of metrics. And in fact, it starts way at the beginning of, are you even talking to the right companies? Have you defined the right ICP? Are you looking at leading indicators? So it can't always be pipeline revenue conversion rates, right? There's many more leading factors. So how do you, I guess, based on the stage, based on what's important, what are your recommendations as it comes to what to focus on?
Start at the end. And so what do I mean by that?
You mean renewals, expansion, retention.
That's right. That's exactly right. What I'm trying to say is, like, look, what we want in our world is we want recurring revenue. That's what we want. Like every metric, that's how companies are being valued. That's how we grow. That's how we create Glide. That's how we create sustainability if you do it right. So recurring revenue. But recurring revenue cannot be a goal. It is an outcome. It is a result of something. And that what it is a result of is called recurring impact. If I deliver to the customer what I promised, then I get that. And I'll give you an example. I'm on Netflix and I'm on Disney. Disney, I unsubscribe. Disney is a fantastic product. Disney is a fantastic brand name. Everything is fantastic about Disney. What is not fantastic about Disney is my kids are out of the house, left the house. We're empty nesters. I don't need to see Star Wars again. And in that mindset, I do not get the impact out of Disney. But I do get the impact out of Netflix. And that means that Netflix gets my renewal. Recurring revenue is the result of recurring impact. Now, how does that apply to what you're asking for? Is that means I need to win customers who not just close, but customers who deliver me recurring impact. And that means I need to start talking to my existing customers first and not only ask them what impact that they get out of this, but carefully listening to the words, to the emotions, to everything that they're saying about it, to start understanding even specific words on what they, when they describe what your product does. Do that and then translate that to ICP and then start flushing the pipeline down, you know, like with all the right leads, opportunities, and so on and so forth.
You know, one of the things that, and I guess this might be because I'm just kind of an emotional mush myself, so I like to go there, and I may at any point during the rest of this podcast just
you
start
can cry
crying.
On the we podcast, have we had Adam, it's
we
okay.
haven't had a real like crying 2020 or Barbara Walters type of moment where someone just sort of lets it. So maybe yes. that'll be today or not. I don't know. We'll see. one of us. Anyway, you talk about like the impact. We also talk about buying experiences, and you've talked about rather buying experiences rather than just products, right? So there's that whole emotional impact, which again, very hard to measure, but incredibly impactful. So how would you recommend, or how would you go about, I guess, essentially trying to measure and be able to enhance, obviously, the how the product is working, how it brings value? You know, there's a lot of tangible there, like it does X, it does Y, the ROI is here. But how do you go after the emotional side and really start to measure what the emotional impact can be on the buyer, which then leads to kind of what you just talked about earlier about the impact, the recurring revenue and so forth?
All this is based on a flawed concept. And the it was originally fine, but the world that we're in and this flawed concept, we have embraced this and we've continued this, and it is falling to pieces right now. And so the flawed concept is on the understanding that, for example, the trust and experience are determining factors, very determining factors. Experience maybe, trust is less so. Now, where this comes from is like the moment in time that I buy a piece of perpetual software or on-prem hardware, right? And the moment in time that I submit that signature in DocuSign, and that the customer or the vendor ships that equipment, I, the buyer, take on all the risk of that purchase.
Yep.
Right? Now, who takes on all the risk when I buy a SaaS service? Who's the person who takes on all the risk?
Whoever's selling it, the organization selling it.
Who's selling it? Now, when I buy hardware, I amortize that purchase, let's say, over 5 years, right? Like my finance department says, okay, well, we skip that, we divide it in 5 years, and they may even find a bank to finance that purchase, and they take the interest rate on top of that, right? But they amortize it over 5 years because they have to spread out their payment, so to speak. Okay, now, in SaaS, that has reversed. When I now actually sell, I have to amortize the gigantic acquisition cost, right, which often is dollar for dollar or worse, right? Like we're currently running analysis that shows that most companies in the SaaS are spending $2 to $4 for the average dollar of revenue acquired. That means they need to amortize the cost of acquisition, hence CAC payback and nowadays what these popular terms are. Folks, that means that the risk shifted from the buyer to the seller. Anywhere else in the world that we would see such a change in risk, whether that is in the healthcare industry, whether that is in the finance industry, it would completely have uprooted the entire business. What did we do? We ignored it. We just kept the same mindset. We kept the same discount level, 20%. We kept the same comp plans. We kept the same VPs of sales with the same mindset. And so all this now has gotten us to this point that it no longer works. That's the problem. So that's one. And the second, and both are equally important. These are two forces that are pulling us and that is causing, combined with growth at all costs, this machine, this is falling on top of each other right now. The second thing is that historically, we have had an asymmetry of knowledge between the buyer and the seller. This asymmetry of knowledge benefited the seller. The seller had more insights on the product and what it could do, had more insights on the market, had more insights on what the customer's problem because they were talking to lots of customers like it. And as a result, there was an asymmetry, and that asymmetry made the buyer want to have trust in the seller. Because of that asymmetry of knowledge, they were seeking trust. Hey, don't mess me up. Don't lie to me, right? That asymmetry, at first it got equal. Why? Because when we're buying SaaS products, there is not that much of a differentiating factor. Everybody is on AWS. Everybody operates on 99.99% of reliability. All the basic metrics are the same thing. So I don't have to speak about like, hey, how does your cloud infrastructure work? Folks, we're on AWS, we're on Azure, it's backed up by, right? So that brought up the level. The second thing that we then did is we lowered the capacity of our sales professionals. And we put them down where average sales professionals in the B2B space operated with 10 to 20 years of experience. We now operate sales experts with like 3 to 5 years experience, right? So, and the last one, AI now is giving our buyers equal or more interest. It is very common that we hear buyers say, I know more about the product that the seller is selling to me than the seller does. Why? Because AI provides like relatively good information nowadays. Now, as a seller, right? As a seller, I am now need to step up, and that is not happening. So these three, growth at all cost, risk shifting, and the asymmetry of knowledge now being shifted to the favor of the buyer, these three are is the reason why we're experiencing what we're experiencing in the market right now.
You know, that explains why the traditional sort of sales funnel has needed to be extended into the bow tie model that you at Winning by Design, are really kind of taking to companies. How has it been received? What are you hearing? You run a lot of workshops, you have a lot of courses. What's the feedback?
Yeah, the number one thing on the bow tie is that it's clarifying, and people have like sometimes very emotional reactions to it because it finally puts things into perspective for them, right? And folks that are listening, the bow tie is based on the funnel. Hack, the funnel is nearly 150 years old. Old things do not always have to be bad. Sometimes old things are, reason why they're old is because they actually survived the test of time because they're really, really good. So we believed, do we want growth loops, complicated circular motion? That would be fantastic. Can we ignore, 150 years of development on the funnel? No, we can't. So why don't we just flip the funnel, mirror it, and we create a bow tie out of it? Left part of the bow tie is acquisition. Right part of the bow tie is retention and expansion. Simple enough. We need to pay as much attention to retention and expansion as we need to pay attention to acquisition, right? Recurring revenue takes place where the funnel stops, right? And so the bow tie extends that. Simple enough. What we find is that this brings together the boardroom, because if I'm only measuring on the funnel, I'm only measuring on leads and opportunities and how many deals it generates, then I'm going to manage that what I'm only measuring on. And now expanding that and starting to put metrics on that, whether that is MRR, GRR, NRR, all the usual triple letter, acronym hell that we're all part of, right? Enter all that. And now suddenly, people say finally, it starts to make sense to me.
Okay. So I would say this is less going to be the crying episode, more of the run screaming episode, just thinking about all these things that we're talking about.
I'll make it to crying episode at the end. I'll try.
Okay. So if we think about a couple of things you've sort of talked about, right? We talked about AI. We talked about self-service, right? Because if suddenly we have this knowledge change where customer knows more. What do you think are some steps? We're always trying to get the actionable things that we can take from one of our episodes here. Companies can take to integrate more AI driven methods into their outbound, or kind of just bringing in stuff, all the things to start to kind of even things out a little bit and sort of say, okay, here's the latest outbound AI driven, whatever it may be. Where does someone start? What do you think are the best places to just dive in and say, okay, let's start here and fix this?
And is it taking our jobs?
Yes, it is taking our jobs. May I ask, hey, how many strikes were you part of SDR strikes? SDR sales development reps. How were you part of any of the SDR strikes? Oh, why was that? Because there were no SDR strikes. And why weren't there no SDR strikes? Because no SDR with a normal mindset wants to stay in SDR. It's like people digging holes manually, with a shovel, say hey, I want to dig more holes, right? Instead, it's they're forming a strike against the backhoe business, against the dump truck business, right? You're taking my job away. Folks, SDR works was never meant to be SDR work, hence the reason why nobody is complaining about it. So AI will take those jobs. We only use human skills and human power in order to fill a gap that was never supposed to be filled by that. And that AI will step in. So that was the second part of that question. The first part of that question is, where should we focus on? Look, I saw the other day, and if you Google, I don't know her last name as well. I think it's Amy Webb. If you Google Amy Webb, South by Southwest 2024. Amy shows how in 2023, when AI just came out, she ran an AI search on show me a picture of a CEO of my company, right? And it showed four pictures of four white male men in their mid-40s with gray hair at the temples, right? She then demonstrated in 2022 doing the same thing. And she noticed that, you know what? It's the exact same output. Four white males graying at the temples in the middle 40s, right? She then even started, spoofing it a little bit, saying, hey, can you show me a picture of the CEO of a tampon company, right? What do we get? We get still a male in their mid, white male in with graying temples, just dressed simply and with a picture behind of tampons, so to speak, right? Why is that? Because the process is wrong. And when the process is wrong, AI cannot get itself out of those broken processes. That means that processes supersede AI. So, Adam, where do we start? We start by creating good processes. And for example, as it comes to Sixth Sense, what is the right process? Target your customer right. Make sure you get your ICP correctly. Don't go after volume, go after quality. Measure those customers, and if you see that they achieve quality, you let them know about that. That is all about process. And that process could go all the way down to defining an ICP, or it could all go all the way down to have a fantastic discovery call this way.
So, Jacko, we haven't cried, but we do have one question that we ask everyone who comes on the show. What is the most ridiculous thing that you've been asked to do in your career?
To do the same thing from all these founders and CEOs to grow their revenue, knowing that it won't work, telling them that it won't work, and they go like, yeah, well, we keep doing it. Look, folks, I just want you to understand. We got right now, we just analyzed again, like Dave Spitz and I analyzed again, 70 plus SaaS companies, okay? 8 of them are financially successful, right? The remaining 64, at least 41 of them are in deep trouble and are spinning out of control. You know, but I would say 10 of them are spinning out of control. Like, and we go into those companies, and what drives me absolute bonkers is that nobody is responsible for the entirety of GTM. There's no, like, there's a person responsible for lead gen. There's a person responsible for sales. There's a person responsible for customer success. But there is hardly anyone, and if they are responsible, it's a soft promotion trying to promote somebody out of sales or something like that, right? But nobody's responsible for the entire GTM. And so this machine runs, it clearly, as the numbers show, has no significance. Give you another number. Do you know, well, I think you do because I posed that to the audience. Do you know how many companies, to success, funded startups it take to generate one startup that reaches 100 million? 50. It takes 50 well-funded companies. That means it's at less than, and it's now dropping to 100. It's now we're at 70, 80. We're slowly going to 100. We have dropped from a winning, from a success percentage, 1.7% to 1.5, and we're now getting into the 1.4 territory. What this means is, of those companies receiving a significant amount of funding, $3 million or above, of a leading, a well-recognized VC, in other words, we extract family funding and like that from it, it takes on average, you know, like 1.5% of those companies will only make it to $100 million. And these are some of the most well backed up with some of the most intelligent people. That drives me bonkers. And that should put me to tears had I not been so many wrinkles and so little hair and this and that. Like, yeah. But we're here to fix that, right? Winning by Design is here to fix that. With services, you know, Sixth Sense and its mindset is there to fix that, because the mindset is right. We need to stop the idea of spam. It's fundamentally wrong, right? It is fundamentally a problem. And I just want everybody to understand, how much do you like people coming knocking at your door at like 7 p.m. at night to sell you something? Like, we romanticize that still, and we say, well, it still worked. Yes, folks, it still works occasionally. But the entire market, you know, like, it not only has an effect, it has an anti-effect. And as we learn more and more about the negative effects of it, companies now start to see is that that brand, which has carefully been manicured, is being destroyed by these spam campaigns.
And I think, you know, I mean, hey, we're with you. We wrote a book on it. No spam, no forms, no cold calls. But I will say, Jacko, you know, it's hard work. It's not an easy transition to make, right? It's sometimes doing what everyone's doing is why, you know, one out of 70 companies actually succeeds. But when you put the effort in, and it is people, process, technology, systems, like it is across the board, that's when you start to see magic.
I'll make this observation to you. And as the listener to this podcast, you're going to find yourself put into one category. Here's the observation. Obviously, we work with many companies, over 1,000 SaaS companies, 30 active SaaS companies ongoing, some large, you know, multi-billion dollars, and some in the $10, $50 million range. You know, we make a recommendation. As a result, that person may find themselves out of a job because something went wrong in the process, right? The first call that they make is winning by design in the next job, because like they go like, that won't happen to me again. As a listener, you either are blind and you're going to yourself as like, look, I'm 16 months in my average 18-month tenure. I'm going to sit these 2 months out, or I need to start right now. My thought here is this: you better start now, because those who will lead 18 months from now will be those who understand how we're going to create sustainable and scalable growth. And that means whether we're using a tool effectively such as yours, or whether we implement services correctly, this change is coming, because growth at all cost, like I said, has come to an end.
Boom. Mic drop right there. I can't think of a better way to end. So thank you. Really appreciate it. A great conversation. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you soon.
Well, thank you for having me. But before we go, Adam, both of you.
You gonna make us cry?
What is the one key takeaway that you picked up from this? Both of you, or the most important key takeaway or something like that.
I know mine. I'll go first. Start with the end in mind, right? Let's replicate winning behaviors and let's choreograph winning.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Do more of what you want and stop doing what you don't want. And you'd learn that by going to the end.
And, Adam, you know, all the AI and technology in the world doesn't fix anything until you've got the right process in place. So start there.
Fantastic point. Amy Webb brought that up, Well, with that said, I want to thank your audience for listening. I know I'm a chatterbox, but thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Revenue Makers.
Do you have a revenue project you were asked to execute that had wild success? Share your story with us at sixthsense.com/revenue, and we might just ask you to come on the show. And if you don't want to miss the next episode, be sure to follow along on your favorite podcast app.